Welcome to Sex Unshackled. I am Becky Crepsley Fox, and this podcast is where sexuality and spirituality meet. Today on Sex Unshackled, I have Bear and Fifi with me. Bear, whose pronouns are he, him, and Fifi, whose pronouns are she, they, are queer, trans, Black, Indigenous people of color, and are polyamorous tantric practitioners from New York City. Their mission is to expand the way human beings relate to themselves, one another, and the world around them. They operate a coaching, consulting, and productions business where they create safer sex positive spaces for people to explore the closeted parts of themselves. Their work challenges the binaries, barriers, and rigid standards that limit human connection and offers alternative ways of relating that center safety and consent, authenticity, and personal agency. Now, I had the pleasure of meeting both Bear and Fifi last year on an Urban Tantra practitioner training. They are both wonderful souls, and I can't wait to chat with them today. Let's start with the question I always begin with. What brought you to this work?
Ooh, it's a long journey. Well, first, thank you for having us. We're really excited to be here and to reconnect. I think that I can start with my individual journey and then like meeting Sophia and how, but I think I've always been, when I was in school, my teachers would call me like a little social worker. Like the human connection and relationships was very high on my list of priorities since I was young. And I was like, I always want to be a therapist or a coach or anything that meant helping or being of service to humanity on like a greater scale. And then like fast forward to, you know, college, university, when you're like having to pick your career, I wanted to be a psychology major. And then when I saw the world of psychology and social work and basically like how trash it was in actually supporting people, I really started to think about ways in which you can combine like these clinical ideas with somatic ideas, with tantric ideas, with more spiritual ideas to create actual sustainable, just like fulfillment for the human life and like the anatomy of a human life. So in meeting Sophia, who had a very just similar mission, we started dating, and because of the way we are, I was like, dating is not enough. We need to start a movement. We're both very, it's just romance, and those things are really important, but more so having kind of like a purpose here and having a joint purpose. And she was like within the same school of thought, especially where we met in a spiritual environment. We met in a 12-step program. So we were really on the same path. And I was working as a case manager and a coach. And I, you know, couldn't stand the industry of that because of the burnout, because it didn't actually support human beings in the way that in full. Mm-hmm. And we hired a coach and kind of took off like really with very little information, and it got us into some stuff, but yeah, we were able to come out of it and really make a business out of this and a mission out of this.
So Bear and Fifi was born during the pandemic, and so I'm Sophia, aka Fifi, and Bear and Fifi has had some evolution. If you go back in time, so it started off as a YouTube platform, as a YouTube channel. And so on there, we have documented, you know, really important milestones in Bear's transition journey. So we grew a following by people seeing themselves in us, and people really championing our journey and our story and wanting to hear more of it. And then just by putting ourselves out there, opportunities presented themselves aligned with what our greater mission was for ourselves and other humans. And then Yeah, and then we decided to go all in and invest on learning how to run a business. And, you know, we're still not experts on what we're doing as far as the adulting piece goes. Yeah, you know, like taxes, what is that?
What? Taxes?
Yeah. But I'm here for the fun parts. You know, I really do feel like there are times when it's challenging, but for the most part, I don't think I could be doing anything other than this.
And what I love from what I witnessed from you both is that you've really tried to practice what you preach, right? Mm-hmm. It's like authentic expression of your truer selves and trying to model this and help other people with the difficulties maybe you've experienced yourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really holds us accountable. Yeah. I know. We're like, we should be taking our own advice.
So today we're going to talk a bit about how to cultivate authentic desire in sex. So this is what some of us may call conscious intimacy. Mm-hmm. Can you kick us off by telling us what this is?
Yeah. So I this was actually when you met us, where we taught a workshop called Conscious Intimacy. And the premise of the workshop was, or the intention was, to really assess how we've been taught to have sex based on gender, based on our bodies, based on just any kind of barrier that assigns a meaning to how we're supposed to have sex. And it's all around us in the media, how we're supposed to have and interact with each other. And conscious intimacy was really meant to like break those down and create and cultivate new ways of thinking about sex and intimacy and connection. And a lot of it has to do with like queerness, but not queerness like everyone has to be having queer relationships, quote unquote, but the way that queerness kind of challenges, or not kind of, really actively challenges any kind of standard. Mm-hmm. That like at its core, that's what queerness means. So queering up sex in the way of removing these ideas of how we're supposed to be doing it based on pretty limiting structures around us about our identities and who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even in hearing you say that, like I'm thinking about how this works, that particular topic, like showing up consciously, authentically, in our most vulnerable form, ultimately is right kind of at the core of the class. And what we break down is that in order to get there, in order to even be able to have such vulnerable intimacy, and to expand our understanding of what sex can look like, really means a multiple step process. The first being like just becoming aware of what our current ideas and beliefs are about sex, and just identifying them. Like, let's just list like what is it that you think you know about sex, and then that's where folks start to become aware of like, oh wow, none of these ideas or beliefs are actually my own. Like they were all I inherited from somewhere, I learned them from somewhere. And so it's kind of like clearing that slate. Like, let's make pretend we're starting off from scratch. Like, let's start at zero now. Like, now that we've identified in the class, one of our slides that we show, we literally Google sex and we show what pops up when you Google sex. Yeah. And we're like, this is a lot of what we think sex looks like. And so how do we start over? Mm-hmm. How do we start from scratch? And then we just get specific about how to get into our bodies, how to find our breath, and then how to find that same kind of rest and relaxation and comfort. We start off with describing how folks can find that within themselves, because we don't believe that it's possible to find that rest and relaxation with others as easily if we can't first cultivate that on our own. So that's kind of like the multi-layered process that we walk people through. Yeah. in that class, and in that, you know, how we call it, you know, achieving conscious intimacy or you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, because I know from working with clients that I have that firstly, they find it hard to disentangle social conditioning to what is actually their desires, what they actually want, what they want sex to look like, because that's all they've known, right? How can we know anything else? And it's making me think about this program that I'm watching at the moment called Severance. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I'm literally watching it at the moment. So I was watching it last night. And I was thinking, so spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it or you're watching it, for the people who are listening. But the premise is you kind of split your brain into two. You have like a brain that goes to work, and that's like its own person. And then you have the brain that's outside of work, and you don't remember what happens in the other situation. And what I just found out from watching an episode yesterday is that one of the main characters, she actually kind of works for the big company that is doing this for the people. Mm-hmm. And I was left thinking, oh, it's so interesting, because her, what they call Innie, her work person, is so against the idea of what this company is doing. And she's trying to quit the job, and she's trying to destroy the company. But her, what they call outie, the person who lives in the real world, because of her social conditioning, because of who her family are, she's for it, and she's for like making society do it. And I think, you know, I was thinking about this only last night, because if we had Severance in real life, you know, I wonder what our sexual identity would be if we didn't have like all that other shit that's been put on it since we were born.
Right.
Yeah.
What would it be like?
It's so big to think about, honestly, because, well, I think it's overwhelming even to, at first, even our clients will be discouraged, or our classmates, to like really look at how much of it isn't our own. And it can initially be like, holy shit, I don't, the amount of, especially, you know, mask centered people that I've worked with and have been like, what do you need? What do you like? What? Like, I don't get it, you know? So this idea, like even you saying that, the largeness of that statement, like what would it have been like if there was one part of us that had no, and even that question can spark this, well, what that imagination of what our sex lives could look like if there was like a whole section of us that wasn't influenced and only our like primal drive for what we want.
Oh my gosh.
Our next workshop will be called Severance.
Sex. So how can people start to work out what their desires actually are?
I think it's first becoming aware of, like Fifi said, the awareness that accepting that maybe it's a problem that that the things or the ideas around us have been influencing our sex life so much. Because a lot of the challenge can be is if someone feels like, well, no, this is the way it's always been. Like, I have no desire to challenge this because I'm comfortable. And we find who serves that the most are cis white men, like people who don't want to shake the foundation because the foundation serves them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really it. So, like, I think the first thing is assessing if someone thinks that it has realized that the foundation is actually not serving them or has decided that for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And once that realization happens, there's more of like a general openness, because if there's a lack of openness or vulnerability to these new ways of sexually relating, we can't really get to, you know, what the authentic desire is, because we're still kind of hung up. And I keep saying men or using men as an example, but because they're so, by this particular dynamic, cis straight men are very on the upper hand, right? Like in the way that we relate sexually, because it's by design for them, they're like, I don't sense any need to change things, right? Unless they do. Typically because they have queerness to speak to, gender to speak to, like all these things that are kind of not worked through yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically, like, if you don't fit the, generally our classes for folks who inherently don't feel like they fit the mold,
mm-hmm.
and offering them a space to feel seen and heard and accepted and loved for not fitting the mold and celebrated for not fitting it. And essentially, that being kind of the permission, I think a lot of this work, at least for me personally, was around giving myself, allowing myself to explore, giving myself the room to be not like the standard, to see how actually very far from it I really am. And that can feel quite scary and isolating if we don't have other people to reflect back that that's actually not weird or bizarre. Mm-hmm. There is a place for you, right, regardless of what you're into.
Right. And I think, like, once we cultivate a sense, because we're so, like, multiple folds, like, we work with individuals, but we also create communities. So those individuals that we're telling to kind of take these risks have community to feel safely affirmed and advocated for. And I think starting with the permission, and we focus less on technique or, like, we offer definitely, like, more generalized tools, but it's really about the, like, emotional body and creating more mind-body connection to sex. And however that works, you know, people have so many different abilities and so many different ways. So really, it starts with championing their agency. Like, this technique might work, but, like, you get to decide because it's your body, right? And it's your desire. And I think when it comes to the most generalized technique is a solo play, starting there and really playing with fantasy and desire. And what we recommend for just this really intentional solo play of getting to know what we enjoy is, like, moving away from voyeurism of any. So I think porn is voyeurism, but in this intentional space, and not to clip those things, but for the purpose of finding out what you like, really setting the tone and creating ritual around masturbation and solo play and what arouses you and touch and fantasy and all those things, so you can get a better sense when no one's around influencing you, mm-hmm, what really gets you off.
Yeah. So bringing those aspects into solo sex, like different textures, different thoughts in the mind, different sounds, just anything, and kind of exploring and experimenting until the person, like, really finds, like, oh, that one really hits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or those ones. Right? Yes. Like a few.
So would you say that this desire issue that we're talking about, not knowing what the desires are, would you say that queer people find this less of a difficulty because they have less of a script to begin with?
I know for me, as a trans person, as a pansexual person, and as someone who grew up in, like, a queered environment, like, just my upbringing was a quote-unquote eccentric, because of literally that exposure, it made it so much easier, or it honestly felt like there was no other option to live a life. Like, I from jump was like, I'm not going to fit in with what's happening. Any attempt that I've made, which I have, because we all do in some part of our life to assimilate in some capacity, has left me feeling pretty empty or just not really, like, severance. Like, there's, like, a part of me trying to live this life as someone who passes as a cis man, like, all these things all at once. And I think that as a queer person, it is so much, I feel so much better when I behave queerly, like I just do. And, I, like, once I let go of trying to survive, it was a lot easier to, it was actually me fighting against these ideologies when I was trying to assimilate. So these ideologies really come naturally to me because of my experience and because of what we just spoke about. It doesn't serve me what exists already. Really doesn't serve me as a trans person and engaging with other people and relating. So there's so much about queerness that we are kind of, when you are faced with adversity, you have to be creative because that's how you know, are able to move through the world and find fulfillment in a world that isn't built for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, I think back to all the, you know, and then this is where kind of, like, behavioral things come in, at least for me, like, when you are someone that doesn't feel like there's a place in the way generally people relate. So like my earlier dating life was filled with me essentially being manipulative and kind of like power hungry to try and feel the way I wanted to, relating to cis men in particular at the time. Like there just wasn't an equity that I, like that's what I was seeking. And so to feel it, it meant leaving them on red. You know, it like there is this dynamic that I needed to couple with the sexual component to feel that sense of just like that I was doing something for myself here. Like there were, I wasn't able to show up to erotic experiences. Like it was two people meeting each other and fully seeing each other for who they were. Like, that didn't come until much, much later. And I found sex positive spaces and learned about consent. And like the fact that that didn't come until, you know, and some folks don't discover this until even later than when I did. Mm-hmm. But for all that time, it wasn't until then that I finally felt, oh, I can bring my whole self here. And so I did. I had to get creative during those periods of how to fill my cup, because it's, you know, these encounters are not doing it for me.
And unfortunately, that's not an unusual experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I hear what you two are saying. You're saying to experiment with things, experiment on your own, because when you're on your own, your nervous system can be more relaxed. You can be more in tune with your body. You can be integrated. I know from working with clients that when it then comes to experimenting with things with a partner or with other people, what I hear a lot is there's a fear of like, what if I don't like it? What if I change my mind? What if it's awful? I mean, what would your advice be for someone who said that to you?
I think like, because I work, this comes up more with my clients who are, doesn't come up with cis men as much as it comes up with non people who aren't cis men, or people who, especially people who are socialized or AFAB. And so that includes, assigned female at birth. And I think it's so much more, and this comes up in the Wheel of Consent as well, but it's less about, because of the culture we live in around perfectionism, and like, if we do one, we have to know like exactly what we're doing. If we do one thing wrong, everything's going to like fall apart. This also is with any person who has like autism, ADHD, like this one black and white thinking, like one detail off, and we both struggle with both of those. So I think what we really help our clients do is cultivate safe parameters, not so much that this is not going to go, you might hate it. That's true. You might experiment with this thing and feel really weird about it. It's more about the choice of community and people who we're experimenting with, or creating parameters that really make space for all of that. And because of the sex parameters that we have now, it is super binary. Oh, you had one strange moment in sex, like someone passed gas, or like it was the worst sex ever, right? Instead of it being this ongoing collaborative experience that might have some moments that are kind of weird, awkward, or uncomfortable, and some that are really great. And it's very aligned with this black and white thinking around sex. It's aligned with all the black and white thinking around us, the binary thinking where if one thing is off, if I didn't orgasm, if I didn't, if the whole thing doesn't look exactly the way that it should, it must mean it was a terrible experience. And
like,
what
scripts, right? Like it has to
otherwise,
right, exactly. There's something wrong with, and then the narrative goes on. But if we're cultivating more vulnerability in sexual relationships, that's really it. That's what it's about. It's about saying the whole, it's not a separate experience to say, I don't like that. Can you try something else? That is a part of sex. So I think like really looking at the full spectrum of what it's supposed to be, because we're human beings and like not meant to be optimized or like these machines that show up to sex perfectly in any way. So starting there.
I think a big part of our approach too is to help build more positive reference to uncomfortable experiences. And so we integrate that with everything we do with all of our clients. It's about building like habits and routines and just getting into the action space where this is. So we're like, we're deprogramming ourselves away from everything we think we're supposed to believe. And so when it comes to the sexual experience, erotic spaces, and if we're moving away from the binary and we're saying, okay, it's not black and white, like it's not bad sex if you didn't have an orgasm. So in order for that to be true, we need to give ourselves more options. Mm-hmm. And so we need to include errors, like just we need to have room for error in sex. Like the same way we're approaching it kind of in with prioritizing inclusivity and people's comforts and mm-hmm. like all these elements that we don't see represented because we see scenes where people just throw each other, you know, up against the wall and start ripping the clothes off. So like that doesn't teach us how to make room for error in, and you know, like error in air quotes, but just like wiggle room for things to happen that are very normal and a part of the human body experience. So it does a lot of it, you know, to really just boil it down to what it looks like is like slowing down a lot of the time and giving ourselves like the room to even ask ourselves what we might want tonight mm-hmm. with the other partner. And so in partnered experiences, what can cause that kind of like panic is like we're already jumping to the conclusions of how things could go wrong. Mm-hmm. And so if we are coming from this place of making room for all of it, it's not about saying like, no, you shouldn't fear those things. It's like, well, what would help you feel more comfortable if that were to happen? Mm. Like, how do we work with that? Because that's like, that's legitimate. That's fear. That's actually information for us to know that maybe that's a point that like there's room for growth there. Maybe there's a, like a corrective experience actually that you might be able to cultivate based on this like thing that you're, that, you know, makes you feel dis-easy around intimacy. So trying as best as possible to create opportunities out of the fears and opportunities for vulnerability. And like for that to happen, generally the approach is just like taking it down several notches all the way around. Like everyone just breathe.
Yeah. So this is what I hear from people. It's this error happens, this human thing happens that doesn't go perfectly, and then the sex stops. Mm-hmm. Right? When what we're talking about is, well, that can be part of sex, exploration, mm-hmm. changing, doing something else, or noticing that thing made me feel too uncomfortable. Well, let's unpick that then. Mm-hmm. Let's focus on what we can do to help support you in that mm-hmm. in the future.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So what would you want the listeners to know as like a main takeaway? So it could be something we've already spoken about mm. or something new, but what do you want them to leave this podcast knowing or thinking about?
I think there's no right or wrong way to have sex as much as the, or like making the intention about cultivating safety and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Like that is what the, in all human relationships, it's not about like the technique or the perfection or like how to master this technique, how to master this system of check-ins. Like it's really about like remaining committed to authenticity and compassion and for self and whoever you're engaging with. So like the more that becomes the center of mutual vulnerability in our relationships, the better sex we're going to be having and the better relationships we're going to be having, whether it's romantic or not. So mm-hmm. I think that's what I'll tell my listeners, is to be kinder to themselves, mm. you know, like to be kinder to themselves in this experience and journey. Like there's mm. no real, the fact that we're exploring at all is like a great, is such a powerful first step that we're questioning desire and where it comes from, and that you're already on this path is yeah. pretty powerful.
And like the, what I'll add to that is to convince people that they should be kinder to themselves is is because of what we're learning about arousal and how it works now. Like, science waited a very long time to teach us about our own arousal. And so what we're finally getting to the bottom of about arousal is that in order for it to be cultivated, for it to, it has to be, essentially, it's like a recipe. Like, there are several things that need to be in place for arousal to be accessible to us. And at the most bottom, most level is a sense of safety and comfort. So if you are someone who is looking to have more fulfilling sexual experiences, it's not going to come from like reading all the books on technique and watching all the videos and like trying to copy what you see in porn. It's going to come from you feeling safe enough in your body to fully and thoroughly let go. Like, that's the full body sensation, mind-blowing, you know, orgasmic things that's how they happen, is when we're able to really sink in and let go. So it is to your advantage to be kind to yourself, because you'll probably have better orgasm.
Ooh, if you do.
It's true.
Where can the listeners find you?
We are bear.n.fifi on Instagram. All our links are there. And we have workshops coming up. We have a play party coming up if you're in New York City. Assuming, you know, we host play parties on a regular basis. So if that's something that folks are looking for in New York City, hit us up. Primarily queer and trans-centered spaces. So that's where people can really keep up with us.
Yeah, and email us at the same bear.nfifi@gmail.com instead of Instagram.
That's for inquiries. If anyone has any questions, DMs are good too.
Amazing. So I'm going to post that, your Instagram and your email address, in the bottom of the show notes page, so people can scroll down and find that as well. Thank you so much. It's been amazing.
Thank you, Becky. Thanks for having us.